Welcome to Roguecast, the official podcast of Rogues Gallery. We'll talk comics for the week, as well as whatever news is on our pop cultural radar. I'm Randy.
I'm Nick.
This is Dave.
And now, on with the show.
Episode 391 of the Roguecast, recorded October 25th, 2022. Our Halloween episode.
Welcome to our spooky podcast.
Oh, there was a sound effect in there. Very cool. I didn't know we were going to be so fancy.
It's our last podcast for Halloween.
It's true. It's true.
It's our last podcast before Halloween party, which if you're listening to this on Wednesday when it releases, is tonight.
Yeah, whatever other plans you had, cancel
them. Cancel them.
Yeah, come on in.
How often do we do a Halloween party?
Very infrequently.
Right. Not once a year.
I don't know that we've... Do we do that?
No, we don't do it once
No.
a year. we might, but
yeah,
if
we'll see.
People come out for tonight, so maybe we'll do it again.
That's true. And there's not tons and tons of sales at the Rogues. We're a small business, and mm-hmm. we can't do it too often, or we stop existing.
Right.
But we are doing one for
That's
this
right.
one, and so again, your participation will make it more likely that future such events will happen.
Right. So come out Wednesday night, buy some stuff on sale.
Yeah.
Get some free candy.
Like our games, all of our games and graphic novels are going to be on sale.
Yep. Come see our cosplayer from out of town, Lucky Lemon.
Yep.
Doing her new Rogue.
Yeah, yeah. She had done Rogue before, but I think she's been doing some updates to it.
Yep.
So she told me an interesting anecdote today about difficulty getting yellow boots.
Oh,
she's like extremely difficult to do without paying just stupid prices for.
Also, you can come in and talk to me and Dave and Nick about Marvel Snap, the game we're currently obsessed with.
Yes,
it happens
just that quickly. It's an app game. But don't let that scare you.
Yeah, we'll be talking more about that later in the podcast. So Halloween party, definitely come out for that.
Yep.
And also on Monday, Halloween, we'll have free candy and free comics.
Oh, that's right.
And Serena will be here from 4 to 6 with some extra stuff.
Yeah, yeah, that'll sort of be our peak time. Like maybe if you pick the kids up from school and you want to swing by, 4 to 6 is your peak plans.
So we got some stuff in for the store this week, some games. We do a little bit of a Kickstarter. And by a little bit, I think we currently have about 50 running. So we kickstart some games and try to get a hold of them. Kickstarter stuff has been a little dodgy lately. It takes a little time.
Right. There was a pandemic.
Like Frosthaven, for example, we kickstarted.
Oh, my God.
It is, I think, now 2, maybe 3 years late.
I think most people probably know what that is, but it's a sequel to the extremely popular Gloomhaven.
Yep.
Basically a legacy fantasy game where you see your heroes through... untold dangers, it's kind of a dungeon crawl game with a dark fantasy setting, but yeah, it's...
Anyway, we still don't have that.
We wait, it's going to show up when it shows up.
But we did get two things from Kickstarter that we've had Kickstarter for a while.
Yep.
One of which is Final Girl. There's more coming on that. It was actually not our full thing, but it is it's a solo game.
Yep.
In which you have the Final Girl core game, and then you buy the level modules. There are different adventures, different monsters,
yep.
kind of thing. And you're trying to survive the end of the game. This package has all 5 of the original series. So you basically have 5 separate games in this game, along with the playmats and all this kind of stuff. Kind of a cool deluxe version of it.
A lot of stuff. If you like the Halloween-y, spooky stuff, slashers, anything like that.
And apparently is one of the most funded solo games in Kickstarter history.
Oh, wow.
So, we also got Call to Adventure Epic Origins. Now, Call to Adventure is... a game where you you draft cards to build your character's story.
Yep.
And it was set in sort of a generic fantasy world. Then they did a tie-in to the Brandon Sanderson, whatever his world is called.
Yep.
And then the Song of Ice and Fire, not Song of Ice and Fire, Call of the Wild, Call of the Wind. What's Patrick Rothfuss' thing? That thing.
That's Patrick Rothfuss'.
So this is their new set that is basically more... directly D&D flavored.
Ah.
So it's got more fantasy stuff. And it's a really cool deluxe box, and it's a fun game to play. And sort of at the end of the game, you'll have built a story.
Yeah, it's there is absolutely a game to it.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, it also has the neat thing of building a character, which does the game Role Player still allow you to import a character from this?
No, that's Role Player. That's different. That's a totally different game.
All right, I don't know what things are.
Role Player is a completely different game where you're dice strapped to build characters. This, you throw runes.
Well, what's the game that Role Player...
that's Role Player Adventures.
Role Player Adventures. Ah, that's it. Yeah, yeah.
Yes, Role Player Adventures are similar, but not the same game.
All right.
Call to Adventure, I think, is... Call to Adventure, one of the things that it does, it has these really cool little art cards.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of cool-looking art on it.
There's okay. difference. There's roles. There's calls.
We got the Starfinder Pirates of Skydock adventure in. This is the first Starfinder board game.
Okay.
Once you're pirates trying to steal a ship.
That sounds fun.
Looks like fun.
Starfinder is, you know, I've read up on its lore. It's got very fun lore. I think people know it's the sci-fi version of Pathfinder.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, a board game based on that seems like a win-win scenario.
We also got the Transformers RPG.
Yep.
From the guys who give you G.I. Joe and Power Rangers RPGs.
Yep.
Also, another solid one.
In every case, it seems like they had a good sense of whatever their franchise was.
Yeah, this one you pick your vehicle form is, your special, you know, your role in the group.
Yep.
And then you're like, there's like three or four different things you pick to build your Transformer.
And that's just fun stuff.
Like
honestly, of all of them, even though my heart is more with G.I. Joe than Transformers, building a character for Transformers sounds like maybe the slightly cooler option. Because I would be a dune buggy.
Yep.
who turns into a shy robot.
Yeah, and there's a way to be a triple changer or have a microbot too.
Oh.
You would also be obsessed with like cavemen.
No. Not until the expansion comes out.
So this looks like a really fun game. We actually sold through our first order of it. We should have more coming tomorrow, I think. But looks really fun. Fantasy Realms Deluxe Edition. This is one of those, like, I don't know if this is like a legendary game. It seems like this is a new version of it.
Uh-huh.
It's a card. It's like a deck builder kind of thing. It won the 2001 Spiel des Jahres Award, I think.
That's the big one.
And this is a new version of that. They've made a couple different, like the Marvel Remix that they made is a version of this.
Yep.
It's a sort of like a game where you might get cards of different combinations, that kind of thing. Looks really fun. We got the American Psycho game, which is a game of like bidding and bluffing. So it is specifically... It is not about the murder side of it. It is about the corporate raider side of it.
Corporate yes. raider side,
which was where
a lot of the funniest satire was. Everybody knows the scene.
There's got to be like
business card scene. Yes, I believe the game is largely based around the business card scene.
That is so bizarre. Right, that paper. That sounds ingenious.
And then I don't think we talked about this last time. I think this came out after our podcast, but there are new Spelljammer minis.
Oh yeah!
No, they aren't the Spelljammers.
This is like randomized booster.
Yes,
boxes.
Yeah.
Yes.
So D&D's like the starship minis are coming later. This is the characters that exist in the Spelljammer world, including the big giant astral dreadnought, which is this cool like space dragon.
Yep. If you go to the store's TikTok, you can see a TikTok video where we panned the camera around and showed some of its cool and hideous angles. It's like kind of a Lovecraftian slug-like monstrosity. It is cool looking.
It is. And then want to mention once again, our buddies Les and Nick are running a Kickstarter for Henshin. That's their video shorts.
Mm-hmm.
About that
henchman lifestyle.
That henchman lifestyle. And they had a big deal this last week. They needed 100 new backers over the course of a week. And then an anonymous backer would back them for $10,000.
Yep.
Now their total goal is
$40,000. Yeah.
They hit the goal, so they are now at like 27. They're closing in on their 40 grand. So
they're about awesome. To be like the three-quarter mark.
But yeah, if you're not checked out, go to Henshin.com and see about contributing to that Kickstarter. These are good friends of mine, and they are. It's going to be a fun series, I know.
Yep, I agree.
All right, on to news. A couple big reveals this week. You guys heard the Doctor Who news? There's two bits of Doctor Who news. One of which is kind of a spoiler. The other of which is about
what just happened.
You heard about it?
I guess I don't know, but let's do it.
All right, so this is a spoiler for Doctor Who if you haven't watched. But I guess that you know, we know that the next Doctor Who is going to be Nkuti, I forget his name, last name, from Sex Education.
Yep.
That is going to be the next Doctor. But before that, they're going to do a few specials. And Jodie Whittaker had her regeneration. She regenerated into David Tennant.
Okay, I saw a clip of this, and I didn't know what I was watching. I even thought, I was like, is this a fan thing? Because, you know, that's one of the things. It's not like David Tennant didn't freeze in years or anything. But I was looking at it, and I was like, I think he'd look older. It doesn't quite look right. That's got to be some fan thing. And I was like, oh, nope, I guess that was real.
Really kind of a fun thing. It seems very wholesome. Like, he's very happy to be playing it again.
Yeah.
They're going to do a series of specials. They're also bringing back Donna Noble as his companion. Nice. So like, it's like kind of they're doing a little best of run before they give the new Nkuti guy a shot.
Well, Russell Davies is back.
Russell Davies is back. It's definitely a little bit back. And Disney Plus has announced they are going to be streaming Doctor Who in 2023, so no longer will you have to have BBC to watch it.
I just saw that. Yeah, a friend of mine who I think said he'd, you know, like, fallen off of it,
yeah,
but longtime Who fan, and he's like, this is going to go a long ways towards getting me back on board.
Yeah, I'll be much more likely to go ahead and catch up and keep up.
Yeah, yeah, or just sure. or check back in on what people have, what you missed
for sure.
in the BBC days.
Well, I was really excited about the new Doctor Who anyway, so.
Yeah.
Speaking of people coming back, Henry Cavill is back as Superman.
Yep.
Again, this is a bit of a spoiler if you don't know it, but if you don't, the internet has really gone out of its way to spoil this.
Yes, well, you know, like he announced it.
Yeah, yeah.
That is to say, there will be actual new Superman movies or new appearances by him. That I don't know if there was a formal announcement about exactly what it would.
They haven't specified exactly what it is.
But it's basically, it's almost got to be a new Superman movie.
Yeah. But he is back. I hope they don't get Zack Snyder again.
I don't think they will. No. I think they actually are more or less done with it. And it's funny, for all that, like, say, Justice League ended up being, like, you know, the Snyder cut of the Justice League ended up going over quite well, mm-hmm. his other ones were, like, kind of box office disappointments. Mm-hmm. Like, there's actually not a real convincing reason for them to want him back other than fan harassment, I guess.
Yeah, yeah.
But we talked about this way back in the day. Not big fans of the Snyder Superman movies, but his portrayal was not the problem.
Yeah, Henry Cavill is not the problem. Henry Cavill is perfectly fine Superman.
Yeah. And you know, DC's a mess. Sure.
Yeah. Yep.
That said, I've had a number of friends who've enjoyed Black Adam, and so it's gotten some little bit of a critical drubbing, but it, like, I guess opened at number one, had solid business. I'm just curious to see where it goes. But, you know, their universe is messy, but overall, that's probably a good thing. Until they do a full reboot, yes, give this guy another shot.
Yeah. All right, the last two things to mention are the Marvel trailers that dropped. And let's start with Ant-Man and Wasp Quantumania.
Yeah. This looks like a lot of fun.
It looks like super fun, but it also looks a little more serious than the last two Ant-Mans.
Yeah.
I mean, Well, this is the one that's like the conceptual Hook trailer. It may not be as serious as all that, but I think they wanted you to see that it's tied into a big bad, and they wanted you to know that there will be some gravity to the big stuff.
Well, let's... So, Kang looks great.
Yeah.
We just seem sort of...
Well, let's just quick say what sort of the premise is. What's the... His
daughter
Cassie.
Has built, like, essentially something that, she said she called it, like, a satellite to the quantum realm.
Well, she said basically, it's like a deep space satellite, but it goes into the quantum realm instead of space.
Right. Yeah. And it looks like something occurs that, like, pulls them all in. Basically, the Ant-Man family. So, Ant-Man, Wasp, original Ant-Man, Michael Douglas.
And original Wasp.
Original Wasp, Michelle Pfeiffer.
And Cassie.
And so it's the whole family kind of having an adventure in the quantum realm, which looks both like, you know, like trippy kind of Doctor Strange world, but then suddenly you find out there's like cities and stuff in there.
It's very spacey, very Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yeah. Yep, and OG Wasp, Michelle Pfeiffer, says, yeah, about that, like, there's something I never told you.
Yeah.
And so clearly there's more to this than we knew, and Kang.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, like, we knew from Ant-Man 1, from Ant-Man and Wasp, the second one, that she had spent decades down there.
Yep.
And we know that Scott Lang spent 5 years in there.
During the snap.
But he didn't know, really. It was time passed in an instant for him.
Right.
But, like, she spent decades down there, and even if the time is different, like, she had age, and she had this sort of post-apocalyptic thing. So clearly, something happened down there, and so we're
She's probably going to be, like, the person who knows what's up.
Yeah.
And she, by the way, she looks cool in the trailer when she's, like, throwing the hood on, mm-hmm. on her kind of cool... traveler.
They show them going to like a cantina of like a four-armed alien.
Yep.
They show a bunch of aliens showing up. They showed like Kang's war fortress.
Bill Murray.
Yep.
Who I assume is playing an elder of the universe. I'm gonna guess the gardener. That's my guess.
That would be great. It'd be a good fit. And Kang, who was set up by Loki, primarily Loki. If you watch that miniseries, you know you've seen him, and. He only gets like one or two lines here, but he's got a lot of presence.
I don't know if this is going to be the actual.
No, this is Kang for sure.
Are we sure, or is this a variant of Kang?
The voiceover says Kang, so if you look
all of them are Kang.
Okay,
it's just
I don't know.
Is it Kang Prime? Is it?
Yeah, that's the thing. It's like Because the one we saw in Loki was
That's the one who remains. That was more Immortus than Kang.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it's going to be a, like, serious version of whatever incarnation of Kang it is. Not like, oh, that's a forgotten lame-o Kang or
it's
something like
Ralph
that.
It's not going to be Ralph Boner, if that's what you're
saying. Well, he obviously knows who Ant-Man is, which a lot of people still think
he's
Spider-Man.
He got the name right and when the other guy didn't.
But that may also be like that they, you know, that could be later in the movie when he's actually met him and talked to him.
Yeah, it's true.
So, I don't know. I like that Cassie's mechanically inclined like her dad. I think that's a cool take on the character.
Yep.
I am very interested in seeing sort of this other world of the quantum verse.
I just realized that this functions not dissimilar to Fantastic Four.
Yeah.
John Byrne famously did a year of the Fantastic Four comic where they went into the negative zone as a family and traveled around and had adventures, and it was kind of like classic Star Trek. Each issue they'd go to a new planet or like area and have some adventure. And I'm like, oh, that's kind of what's happening here. It is sort of a family vibe.
Yeah.
Interestingly, right on the cusp of an FF book coming out, FF movie is going to, you know, be out in a few years. And I wonder if this is it means that, well, like, at least this is territory they won't be covering.
Or if the FF is stuck in the quantum realm and has been since the 60s.
I mean, that's the kind of reveal that I could see here. That could, in fact, have that has time travel elements to it.
Yep.
We've talked about that possibility. Kang is involved, so sure. And it'd be... Lately, Marvel has been having fun with sneaking in things.
Yep.
She-Hulk sneaking in Scar and all of that stuff. Yep. Just sudden, like, oh, I thought I was watching this, and then there's this part of the Marvel Universe I had no idea that just opened up.
Yep.
But, yeah, it looks good. It's just like a teaser trailer, but it's...
Yeah,
it's
a teaser. By the, my slight disappointment, which I'm not going to judge too harshly yet, there's no Luis. There's none of the crew from his security
Oh,
company.
Yeah.
And if they're going to be in the Quantum Realm, we'll probably see them at the beginning of the movie and then not again.
Actually, I wonder if there could be some sort of Fast and Furious type thing where they help out in the end.
Maybe.
My slight disappointment is sometimes very CG things look very CG.
They're very CG. There's going to be a lot of CG.
But I also am not particularly worried about it. It's a fitting thing for the setting.
Well, you've seen the memes already going around comparing this to, like, Spy Kids 3, right?
No.
Yeah. They show a bit of, like, them together, and it's like Spy Kids did it first, and it's old technology, but it's kind of funny.
Right. And, of course, you know, they're going to polish up the
because Robert Rodriguez was ahead of his time in doing the fully digital scenes and stuff.
Yeah.
It's just funny. Yeah, it's just kind
of
funny.
Also, I want to compliment their use of a sort of warped and haunting version of Goodbye Yellow Brick Road, great Elton John song that was used to good effect here.
Marvel's good at a lot of things. One of them is trailers.
Yep.
Casting's another big one. Like they're good at a lot of what they do at this point.
Yeah. Well, the clever thing is that they I'll go ahead and make the movie good as well very often.
Interesting.
They're like, let's make a good trailer for a good movie.
And I have that. I feel like this is going to be that. Peyton Reed has not made a bad Ant-Man movie yet, so...
Yeah, I am...
Same director as the previous two?
Yep.
Yeah, their track record is great with me.
Yeah, you know Peyton Reed. Ant-Man, Bring It On.
Bring It On's a good movie.
Bring It On is a good movie.
And if this... I was going to say this could end up being my favorite trilogy in the MCU.
No, all time.
Of all time.
Better than Lord of the Rings.
What is Captain America? What's Cap?
Winter Soldier, Civil War, and Cap.
Oof.
You can't beat that.
That's going to be tough. It's going to be one of those where I'll have to say, like, they're very different, but I like this just as well, potentially.
Definitely like it better than the Iron Man trilogy.
Yes. And Thor is a mixed bag for me as well.
Yeah.
So, but those would be, that would absolutely be the one to beat.
And Avengers is a quadrilogy.
That's true.
Well, Thor is too.
Yeah, that's true. Thor quadrilogy and the Avengers quadrilogy, it's pretty easy to make a decision on that one, too.
I only judge quintologies.
Oh, okay.
All right, should we move on to the next?
The other one is the Guardians of the Galaxy holiday special, which just dropped today.
Yeah. I assume this will be an hour-long holiday special the same way...
Yeah, in the vein of Werewolf by Night.
By Night was for Halloween.
But it looks like Star-Lord is down in the dumps, and the rest of the crew have decided...
Down in the dumps because...
Gamora,
she got cacked in...
She died, and then she came back, but it wasn't her, and she disappeared.
Yeah.
Right. In a very hallmarky sort of way, the crew decides to get him a present and pick up his spirits because the Earth holiday Christmas is showing.
I'm gonna say said crew. I honestly think this is just Drax and Mantis,
and everyone else is going along with it.
Yeah, well, they're clearly going to be the leads in it. By the way, it looks like it may be a good opportunity to put the spotlight on Mantis. She seems to be the ringleader.
So they go down. They're going to go down to Earth. And give him a visit Earth, and they decided to get him the perfect present. I thought it was going to be David Hasselhoff because they mentioned that.
Yeah.
But instead, it's the other one he mentioned. It's Kevin Bacon. They decided to kidnap Kevin Bacon.
tell me, as a person who hasn't seen these movies as often, how specifically was Kevin Bacon mentioned previously?
He talked about Footloose being the greatest movie ever made.
Right, I do remember this.
And he compares himself to Kevin Bacon.
And they go there. You will see Kevin Bacon running in terror from Mantis and Drax as Drax explains, "You're coming with us, you're going to be a Christmas present."
Yep.
I was laughing my ass off at that point.
Yeah.
It looks like a lot of fun. These are hour-long specials, probably. That'd be my guess. And I think that's just that seems just about right for something like this.
Yeah.
I don't know. It looks like fun to me.
Oh, it looks great. All
right.
By the way, like that. It's a way to kind of check back in with the Guardians without doing like a full-ass movie.
Yeah,
I think that's kind of cool.
Yeah. All right. We're gonna take a break, and then we're gonna talk about comics for the week. We are talking comics for the week of Wednesday, October 26th.
Yep.
And I guess first thing to mention here is that there's a new Star Trek book.
Yeah. I haven't read it yet because it follows Sisko after the events of Deep Space Nine. And I'm currently marathoning, essentially, Deep Space Nine.
Yep.
It's going to be some months before I finish it. I'm on, like, season 5 of the 7, and it's... or 6 of the 7. It's been amazing, just really, really, really fantastic, and I broadly kind of know some of what happens here, but I don't want to like glean any details,
right?
Which is too bad because Randy, you tell me it's good.
It is. It's a good run. I'm not going to say anything that's going to spoil Deep Space Nine for anyone, but this is post Deep Space Nine. Sisko is back, which you may know. Dave already knows the one little bit, which is that Sisko did sort of
ascend
to godhood, essentially. And he comes back to Deep Space Nine and has a mission, and he puts together a crew. This mission is sort of vague. He doesn't have full memories.
I believe on behalf of the Prophets?
On behalf of the Prophets. But he doesn't remember all of it because now he's human again, basically.
Oh, I see.
So it's like he's got little vague notions.
That's kind of like the deal with Gandalf. He is in a human form, but he came from like a godlike place.
So he has to go to Picard, and Picard assigns Data as his first officer.
Yep.
And they get this cool ship called the Theseus.
Okay.
That is a Discovery-class experimental ship that was damaged during the V'ger crisis, that became a technology, like an experimental vessel, was recommissioned under Scotty, who you might remember from Next Gen.
He came forward out of a transporter buffer, I think, where he was old Scotty.
This is older Scotty's last ship, and he basically reconstructed the ship with Next Gen components,
tricked out,
and was captain, and now he is giving it over to Sisko for this mysterious mission. Sisko's crew also includes Paris from the Voyager, and a couple other people who I don't necessarily know, but who might be. There's an Andorian. There's a Vulcan.
Paris is he helmsman? I guess.
Yep. There's a familiar medical officer. It's got crew from all the different things, and they're dealing with the godlike aliens of Star Trek. That's kind of their mission.
Yeah, that sounds super fun.
It's a really fun first issue, and is like a best of Star Trek. I was pretty happy with this. I think people who like Star Trek would want to give it a shot. We may have underordered a little bit, unfortunately, so we're hoping to have some more in next week. We might be out fairly quickly on Wednesday. DC had a couple new ones. They have Punchline, the Gotham game. Nick, did you read this?
Yeah, I did. I mean, it's just continuing adventures of Punchline as she.
What's her goal to do? I made the sign for this, and I think the sign, at least based on their solicit, there was something like she's out of prison and trying to like move in and like not just as like Joker's henchman woman, but as like moving on Gotham gangs or something like that, or make a bigger move.
Yeah, she was exonerated from her all of her sins, and is sort of moving out on her own away from the Joker and kind of taking over things.
Is it too big a question to ask how she got exonerated?
A good lawyer.
Oh, okay. That's believable.
But yeah, and she's going against the kings. There's some Royal Flesh Gang involved.
Oh, right, yeah, I heard that they're like back in her play or whatever. Yeah. That sounds fun.
And maybe some Batman as well.
Okay. I don't think any of us here are giant Punchline fans, but that's a good premise.
Yeah.
And then there was Riddler Year One. It was written by, or co-written at least, by Paul Dano.
Yeah, it was Paul Dano and... Actually, it might be completely written by
him. I think it might be. What struck me is I only read a little bit of it, and I was like, it actually didn't read like an amateur.
No.
Like, he felt like either he is a comics reader or picked up on it quick. I don't know that if it'd be my thing. It is, you know, it is that darker movie-verse version of him.
It's his Black Label. It's outside DC continuity.
But yeah, the art was fantastic. Who's the artist?
Art is Stefan Subic.
Okay. Not somebody I know, but...
it's kind of in that like, Mitch Gerrard's... yeah.
But there's also, like, there's some, like, Bill Sink... Not Bill Sienkiewicz, but... God, I don't know.
No,
I
there's
feel like
a little bit of that.
A little bit of that. A little, almost like Phil Noto, as far as the color palette and stuff. Anyway, it's good looking art. And
but if you were wanting to see the origin story for the Riddler from the new Batman Robert Pattinson movie,
or just get some more stuff that this is like canonically, I believe the origin. Or
yeah.
I think they're going to use the like if and they will proceed forward from here. So, certainly there were a lot of fans of the Batman.
Sure.
And, yeah, if you just want some more of that world, there it is.
You can supply your own Nirvana.
And then we've got a new image book called Lovesick. This is Maria Lovett, who did Faithless with Ryan Azzarello, I think.
Yeah.
This is a very strange, very bloody book about... this is a.
I was gonna say this is Luana Vecchio.
Luana Vecchio. It is not. It is not. It's not Maria Lovett. I thought it was Maria Lovett. I don't know who Luana Vecchio is, but this is a very strange book about dominatrixes torturing with consent men on the internet to death for a live stream.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then it's less consent because they kidnap a like red pill incel guy who has been harassing them on the message boards, and they torture him for the video
and take him to like the red room.
There's a lot of interesting there's a lot of interesting things in there, because you know the torturing with consent reminds me of like there was like, wasn't there some dude who like consented to be like cannibalized?
Yeah,
like
yeah.
Every once in a while I'll hear about this. I feel like Germany is where it happened,
and they're like, you can't actually consent to that,
and yeah, but it's like but people will do those things. Yeah. And so it sounds like it touches on that and a bunch of other stuff. I don't know that I like it, but I'm going to give this a read now and see what weirdness is afoot.
I mean, the art is really good.
Yeah, yeah. So the next other two things we're going to talk about are weird, too. There's a lot of weird sort of horror-y books this week.
Yeah.
Dead Mall is a Dark Horse book. It's a miniseries about a bunch of teenagers in an abandoned mall, and the abandoned mall seems to have a malevolent sentience to it. Right?
Is that what yeah, but there happens? Are also like monsters that have taken up residence in this
like
abandoned mall.
The mall is like creating the monsters.
Yeah, it definitely seems to be alive.
Yeah, it's a weird mall horror story. And
apparently, this is written by a novelist. I forget.
Yes, yeah. Serena, our staffer Serena, said something about that.
Yeah, said that he comes from like sort of YA horror. A book that sounded very schlocky, but is I've had her describe it for me before, and it was actually end up sounding like pretty clever and fun. It's called Clown in a Cornfield.
David, okay. I believe it's pronounced Yahor.
Oh, Yahor. Harry Potter is one of my favorite Yah-fiction books.
Yeah, yeah.
That wasn't how it said before.
Yah.
It is now.
Yah-fiction.
Do y'all have a Yah section? Yah.
I want somebody to go into a Barnes & Noble and say that.
Yeah, here's the thing. I'm sure
they've someone heard it. Has, yeah. And then Boom has a new book called Damn Them All, which is Simon Spurrier and Charlie Adlard of Walking Dead. That seems to be sort of like gangster supernatural stuff and angels and very pretty, very weird supernatural stuff.
Okay.
So Another interesting number one for Boom.
And that title's pretty metal.
Yeah. And then the trilogy of American Jesus started, I think, like 30 years ago by Mark Miller.
It's been a while.
He is finishing up this story. It's art by Peter Gross and Tom Coker, so the art is really, really nice.
Yeah.
And this is basically there is an Antichrist who is now President of the United States and is trying to usher in the final revelation, and a new returned Jesus who is a black girl who is trying to stop him. And it's as bonkers as you would expect.
I remember reading the first part of that, which I believe is the only part I've read. I'm not the biggest Mark Miller fan in the world, but it is intriguing. If I'm not mistaken, Mark Miller once seriously considered becoming a priest, as wild as that is.
That makes sense. I can see that.
Yeah, you can see the damage that was wrought.
The first American Jesus was interesting because it basically was this Southern kid who looked like he was getting Jesus' powers. He could heal people and all this kind of stuff. And the big reveal, the big twist at the end was that he was the Antichrist.
Right. At first it was like this little kid, teenager kind of coming to terms with the awkwardness of oh, well, what am I going to do? Oh, I'm so nervous about this. And then he's like,
nope. In the we didn't find out until the very last page.
Yeah. No, that's what I meant. But then
there was nothing for like 20 years.
Yeah, it's probably been like 10, 15
years.
And
then he did a second one, which showed the new actual Jesus.
Yeah.
And this one is bringing the two of those characters together and doing these sort of like another take
on
the
big
end time
as a provocateur
story.
As he is, Jesus returning as a black?
Black girl.
Black girl. Sounds very much up his alley.
Yep.
And does, even though I like, sometimes I think his provocateur stuff is schlocky, he is not without interesting ideas and interesting scenes.
This is one of his better ones. I actually really like this.
I remember liking the first one. I think people might want to take a look at this if you like some of that preacher style. Let's dig into theology and from the point of view of somebody who might well actually like still have some deep religious beliefs, but is probably also extremely progressive and willing to just ask all the hardest and cruelest questions.
it's pretty good, and for Millar, pretty restrained.
Yeah.
Then there is the Moon Knight Annual number one. I think
my favorite book of the week.
We've talked at length about annuals and how it's kind of a weird, outdated thing to do annuals anymore. But this is the rare exception. It's a really good story. If you're reading Jed McKay's Moon Knight, which, by the way, it's Jed McKay Tuesday.
Oh, yeah, yeah. He's got a few books out,
In addition to Moon Knight, he also has the final issue of Iron Cat and a new issue of his book Strange.
Yeah.
Jed McKay is, like Tom Taylor, one of the best writers in the business right now.
Yeah.
People should be paying attention to what he's doing.
And I have not been following Moon Knight, and I think you were maybe about to make this point, Randy,
but it's interesting
that you found this a good annual. I read it without really knowing anything about what's going on and found that I could read it and that they filled me in on whatever stuff I needed to know. And it's very cool. And it has Werewolf by Night.
That was the point I was going to make, is that, yes, Moon Knight Annual is interesting that I, as a diehard fan of McKay's Moon Knight, which I've been really enjoying, it's getting better and better as it goes along, really enjoyed it. But Dave was the first one to read it, and he was like, I really like this, despite having not read really any of Jed McKay's Moon Knight.
Yeah.
So you can approach it as a new thing.
Honestly, even if you just wanted to look in and kind of get a vibe for what Moon Knight feels like a little bit at the moment, I think this annual would do it.
But their take on Werewolf by Night here is really interesting. It's a new take I haven't seen before. There's some good action. There's a strong character bit that goes through. There's really nice art.
I don't know if people know, but there is a long history between Moon Knight and Werewolf by Night.
Moon Knight's first appearance was in the Werewolf by Night book. He was hired.
Boy, is that not true of many characters.
No.
But yeah, that's where he first appeared.
Werewolf by Night, and there's Moon Knight.
At its basic tie, though, werewolves transform from the moon, and Moon Knight is the god, works for the god of the moon.
Yeah, there was an interesting thing where they tied sort of werewolves into Khonshu.
There's some
was
cool
really
ideas in there.
Yeah,
it was actually a really neat, some neat concepts.
It is also a double Junji Ito week. We have talked at length about Junji Ito, and I'm pretty sure...
The horror master of manga.
Indeed. They have a new deluxe version of his Dissolving Classroom. As well as a new collection of short stories, I think, called Black Paradox.
Uh-huh.
Here's the premise of Black Paradox.
Okay.
This may be just one story. It's not maybe one of his longer stories. Four people intent on killing themselves meet through the suicide website Black Paradox. They wander together in search of the perfect death, fatefully opening a door that leads them to a rather bizarre destiny.
That sounds good.
Yeah.
That's dark.
Dark
but,
and weird.
But good.
Also, a reprint this week of Krampus, a Yuletide adventure, which it's too early for Christmas, but Krampus is sort of horror-friendly flavored, so I'm going to allow it.
All right. Yeah, they're sneaking in with a little technicality.
But this is a story of Krampus being free from himself for 7 decades and is tasked with a mission along with his flying wolf, fighting crazed nutcrackers, Christmas cowboys, and a malevolent gang of sugar plum fairies.
Okay.
So, yeah. Along with all that, there are so like, the final issue of Cliff Chang's Catwoman Lonely City came out, which is really good.
That's, like, Catwoman of the future, right? A somewhat older Catwoman? Like, ancient, but, like, you know, what? It's supposed to be, like,
she's
what,
older.
20 years down the road?
Yeah.
Something like that?
There's the finale of the Iron Cat miniseries, the penultimate issue of The Variants, the Jessica Jones mini that Gail Simone's writing, which has been really good with Phil Noto art.
I like that.
Second issue of Sergeant Rock versus the Army of the Dead, which is actually I really quite enjoyed.
And notably is written by Bruce Campbell.
Yep. And the second issue of Donny Cates and Ryan Sabin's Vanish, the crazy magic vigilante thing they're doing for Image.
Not a bad week.
Not a bad week. All right, we're going to take a break, and then we're going to talk about a little video game and a movie and another video game and a podcast, all kinds of stuff. We begin this week with a tale of addiction.
Yeah, okay. I don't know where this what we're talking about.
This is the last.
I do know what we're talking about.
So there's this app that just came out called Marvel Snap, and I had a friend who'd been beta testing it, and so when the ads started showing up for me, I was like, oh, I'll play this little dumb app game. I try not to play too many of the free-to-play games. I don't have the money for that kind of thing.
Yep.
Hey, I don't want to. Because
we all know they're not fully free-to-play.
They're not free-to-play.
They're free-to-play for about a week, and then something happens, and your next thing you know, you spent $30.
Yes. So Marvel Snap is a little sort of digital card game in which you get cards that represent different Marvel characters, and you get 3 random locations in each game, and you basically play these characters onto the app. You can get up to 4 characters on each location, and their power determines who wins the location, and whoever wins best 2 of 3 wins the game.
Yeah, yep. So you're basically vying for control of these locales, playing cards. Sometimes the cards affect just the stuff at that location. Sometimes there's neat little cascading effects that go to other locations or amp up characters that are there, and you can reverse fortunes with lots of neat powers. And visually, it looks very neat because when you play the cards, you'll see like little sort of animations of the heroes. Kind of like really good Flash animation, you know, well, better than that. But but I'm not talking like full animation, but like, you know, special effects over cool art, like from the comics.
Right. And so I was playing it. Dave, I don't know if you picked it up because I was talking about it.
Yeah. I decided I'd just try it the other day and, you know, found it. Had a very fun tutorial. The tutorial is a really good one. It'll teach you the basics. There's Nick Fury talks you through it and like talks trash with Dr. Doom, who's your virtual opponent in the early things, and you pick up on it quickly.
So
and then Nick got pulled in mere hours ago. Yep, yeah. But because the games can actually be played quite quickly,
five
minutes or so.
Or less.
You've been able to play like, I don't know, a dozen games or something like that.
I'm well past the tutorial and already like level 4 or 5. Yep.
And you will earn cards and updates on art and things like that, which is, you know, with bonus points.
Yeah. So each card, basically there are levels and you can, the first one is a frame break where they break out of the frame and they like extend a little bit.
Yep.
Then there's an animation backup and then there's a 3D look and there's all kinds
of
little,
genius bits of them is that like you get that little thing, you know, like it's kind of getting an achievement unlocked in like a video game, but like a little bit more so. Instead of just like some pop-up that just tells you achievement unlocked and has a title, you know, you'll see like an animation of something happening. And when they do these, when you upgrade your card and get the frame break, they make it actually like look like the character is breaking out of the frame, and the narrator in that like voice of like a Street Fighter game is like frame break.
Yeah,
it's and it's so the little upgrades you do all feel very satisfying in the game, but at its heart, it's a very fun, quick play game.
Yeah. But also, you get to build separate decks. You get to build the decks of like what 8 or 10 characters.
Yep.
You can keep building multiples.
The decks are small, so like the commitment. Like, if somebody told me that there was a game, like like Magic is like a little more deck building than I want to do.
Yeah.
But here, really, all I'm doing is picking of the cards I've got, maybe 12 of them, yeah. about like that, yeah. and trying to decide. And it's even pretty obvious, even to a noob like me. I'm like, well, I need some low point cards that to play in early in the game, and some high point cards for later in the game, and stuff in the middle. And then just deciding which one characters might be fun to combo together.
The character selection is great too, because it's a mix of characters. Like, yeah. what's interesting is like I haven't run across like Thor is in here somewhere, but I haven't seen him yet.
Captain America is like if you can buy him.
Yeah, but Cap, you get Cap later on too.
Do you?
Okay. I just got Cap today.
Yeah. So, but like. The characters that you
there's
start
some
with, like,
big names and some and then some more esoteric characters.
There's like this. There's like Sentinels.
Yep.
There's I'm trying to think of some of the weirder.
By the way,
ones
a random in. Sentinel example of one of the powers. When you play a Sentinel card, it because they travel in packs, it creates a duplicate card that goes into your hand yep. as a possibility for the next hand. Now they're not super powerful, but you will have multiples of them at your behest.
Yep.
Yeah, there's some cool stuff with powers. Like I don't have him yet, but Sinister, when you play him, he creates a clone of himself.
Yep. Elektra will assassinate an opponent.
Another 1 point card.
A low point card that's at the location that she's at. That's fun. And there's certain like you can even like defend against things well, like that.
And to give an example of what the sort of the effects are, Elektra, when you put her down, if a 1 point card is revealed, and when she's revealed, a little sigh flies out from her and stabs the other card, and it disappears.
Yeah. It's just purely a visual flourish, but they seem to have thought of this that a lot of stuff like that in the game.
Like when you put Cap down, his power is that he gives +1 power to everybody else at the, and he yells out "Avengers Assemble" when he does it, and yep. a little shield thing goes.
That's
out.
Awesome.
Yep. It is a very satisfying little game.
Yeah, it is.
And like I say, the mix. I've been impressed by the depth of some of their like their characters. Like Cosmo from the Guardians has shown up in there. Like
Sleepwalker.
I have not seen Sleepwalker yet, but I did see somebody on my Phil played a or somebody on my the group that, or the people that I'm playing somebody played a Quinjet,
huh?
Squirrel Girl is in there, and when she appears, she unleashes squirrels at all the other locations.
Of course, she
is. And they're just low point things, but sometimes you'll see that like actually just having something on a location is good. Yep. Like you can get something out of that, and they also appear without having been played there. Certain locations, like Death's Realm or whatever, yep. like any card you play there, if you actually play it on the location, gets destroyed, killed by death. But if a card gets there via some other mechanic from like another place, like her squirrels, for instance, then they get to stay. So yes, Squirrel Girl's squirrels can get into like Death's Realm, but like the Hulk couldn't if you played him on there.
There's also like
Nightcrawler can teleport between locales.
Armor is in here.
From X-Men.
Yep, Morph.
Oh wow,
the Hulkbuster, which is kind of fun. It basically it adds on to a different card, which is how you can wind up with what I had earlier, a Hulkbuster squirrel.
Okay, sure.
Yeah.
White Tiger, Odin, The Thing, Wolfsbane, I'm just skimming through mine, Colossus, Scarlet Witch, Star-Lord, he has a cool power.
Yeah.
Just try it out.
It's worth it. Marvel
download
Snap.
The demo, and yeah, Marvel Snap, and just try it, try out the tutorial.
Yeah.
To go back through since this is the Halloween episode, our last couple yep. Halloween themed, I closed out my Halloween movie watching. I'll probably watch a couple more on Sunday, but I watched Scream, the new one from this year.
Is it just called Scream?
It's just called yep. Scream. And it is, it's Scream 5.
Scream yes. 5, still screaming.
Still screaming. and it has a bunch of new actors in it. You recognize there's Corey from Cobra Kai. There's Huey from The Boys. There's a girl who is an ex, Jenna Ortega.
Yep.
And
of course... David Arquette.
David Arquette and
Courtney Cox.
Courtney Cox and Neve Campbell?
Neve Campbell.
They all make their returns, as well as the sheriff from Scream 4. So there's a mix of old and new. And there's a character in here who is sort of the commentator who like is doing all the meta stuff, talking about how it's a requel.
Yep.
I think it's directed by the same guy who did... what was the movie that he did? Ready or Not.
Oh, right. That's
which
right.
I really enjoyed.
Yeah.
And this was absolutely my favorite Scream that I've seen since the first one.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun.
You said it did reference a few things from Scream 4.
Reference stuff from all of them, I think, yeah.
Okay. But would you say you could watch it if you hadn't seen anything but, say, the first one?
Yes, but I think I'm glad I watched Scream 4 because there's a character in that I wouldn't have connected with if I hadn't seen Scream 4.
Nice.
But, yeah, really fun, really, really good, and...
good combination of sly and a little scary. Do they manage to have any sort of stakes? Do you feel
the characters are truly threatened?
And there are a lot of little Easter egg surprises in there, too.
There are. And for sure, one of the characters is talking about elevated horror and all her stuff that she likes is The Witch and Babadook.
That's such a conversation in horror circles now.
And Ghostface is like, elevated horror sounds like bullshit.
Yeah.
And there's also a bit about toxic fandom. Basically, the fans hated Stab 6, which was directed by Rian Johnson. And they are not even hiding that they're poking at Star Wars fans.
That's funny.
It's really good. I really enjoyed it. It was a lot of fun. It's got some good kills and stuff. Maybe I'm very excited for the next one they're doing. They just finished filming. Dave, you were playing Until Dawn.
Actually, maybe we should mention, since you're talking about creative kills, maybe we should do this to talk about Halloween Ends, which I know Nick was.
Oh yeah,
going to. I just sneakily segue into that. Which I can't remember if I had talked about it.
You briefly did, but I said I was going to watch it, and you were like, "Oh, I'll just." Briefly talk about it.
Yeah. So probably, if you are a horror person, you have probably already seen some opinions on this, I feel like.
Yeah.
Nick, you, even before you saw it, probably saw that people were reacting.
Well, I saw that it was at like 39% on Rotten Tomatoes, which is on weirdly where Halloween Kills was.
I liked Halloween Kills.
I know you did.
I thought it was pretty all right.
Yeah.
And ultimately, by the way, I will say I liked Halloween Kills more than Halloween Ends. But,
So Halloween Ends is definitely a departure from what people should expect from a Halloween movie. It is not a typical slasher.
There's also not a ton of Michael Myers in it.
He is there.
He's there, but it is more about, like, he's, like, essentially, like, holed up in a, like, sewage drain. He seems like a creaky old man.
Well, he did get, like, the shit kicked out of him and, like, stabbed and a bunch of crap last time.
Yeah, well, so much so that they kind of made out in that in Halloween Kills that it was almost like something supernatural, that the town's own fear and evil had fueled something supernatural in him. But they never outright said it. And so, otherwise, yeah, this guy got, like, shredded before then shredding. He then killed all his killers.
Yeah.
This has like a it would make sense that he would be kind of a broken person like that, but boy, some fandom does not like seeing they don't want to see Michael emasculated. I think that's how they see it.
Just so strange.
But it is that is the thing with slasher movies. You are there for the slasher to do your bidding as the audience member and see kill teenagers.
But we do get a slasher in this. It's just not Michael.
Slasher, yes. I think we can say loosely what the plot is. So,
it basically opens with a kid babysitting, or
a snotty little kid.
A teenager babysitting a snotty little kid.
And an accident happens.
Yeah, the kid locks him in a door, in the attic.
And he's trying to freak him out. He's like, Michael's coming. And when he kind of finally gets out, the door, like, busts open. And the kid is right out there, and it knocks him over the ledge of the awning, right as his parents are coming home, and, like, their little kid falls down and splats.
Yep.
And so this guy, who is kind of the lead character along with the granddaughter of Jamie Lee Curtis's Lori, he, like, what, gets manslaughter? He doesn't...
Yeah, he goes to prison.
Does he go to prison for a couple years?
Yeah.
But he's released, I guess, for some reason. Like, he's not too long goes by. A few years?
Yeah, I would say a few years, and he's let out.
Like, he's only in his early 20s or something.
Yeah.
But everybody in town knows the deal. Everybody is like, oh, child killer.
Yeah, he is not well-liked, but neither is Lori's granddaughter because, or Lori, honestly. They all think that Michael is... basically their fault.
Right. Yeah, you see some people holding that against her, kind of shaking it against her. Almost, it's a little bit of that version of sometimes when people say, like, Batman, you created the Joker.
Right.
There's a bit of that. It works a little bit better in a horror setting where you're supposed to be a little bleaker.
I kind of like that the idea that that Michael had sort of infected the town and sort of transformed it into sort of, like, every, like, bad thing was blamed on him and, like, the murders and stuff. Like, right. Oh, it could have been Michael.
It's a proper way to kind of make him, elevate him to a sort of legendary status, which is to say that he, you know, in some ways he destroyed the town. And yet, that's not quite the story they're telling, ultimately. But there is, it's really the story of, right now, or for most of the movie, and this is why some people didn't like it, of that guy who got out of prison, convicted of manslaughter, as he tries to sort of live a normal life. But then begins succumbing pretty quickly when things go bad for him, like when people try and bully him and stuff. While hiding out from some people trying to beat him up, ends up in those sewers with Michael, and there's like a sort of transformative thing where like Michael is like going to teach him to be a killer. More like to live up to what they think he is.
Yeah, well, I thought that there was, like, a recognition of, like, they were the same in a lot of ways, and, like, Michael infected him further in a way.
Right. And meanwhile, he's dating Laurie's granddaughter.
Yeah, whose existence is very sad, and she's very damaged by losing her mom in the last one.
I felt like their romance couldn't help but remind me, though, Nick, of Anakin and Padme. Where I'm like, at some point I think she finds out about, like, some of what he's been doing, that he's maybe even killed some people, and it doesn't seem to deter her.
Yeah,
and I'm like, okay.
Kaylee was having some problems with that. I was just kind of like, you know, she is so beyond the pale of, like...
Well, early on she didn't seem that messed up. Like, she had a job she didn't like, and people were like... But it almost seemed like more like just, honestly, problems that women face. She was like... At her job, somebody was sleeping with the doctor or whatever,
got
and was like, got the promotion. She didn't, you know, this is kind of normal life stuff. She didn't seem to be like in abject misery.
No, but she was trapped in the town she didn't want to be in because her grandmother was there. And, I mean, she did lose her mom to a psycho killer.
I mean, I guess that's reason enough to date a psycho killer.
Well, I don't think he... had killed, that she knew he had killed anybody other than the small child. And that was an accident.
Right, that's just mere manslaughter. But so here's the, and that's the thing, is like the very debate we're having is kind of, that's the heart of the movie.
Yeah.
Is this, and it's not like a body count movie. There are things where he slashes things. There are things where Michael slashes some things. Michael
some
doesn't.
Pretty gruesome kills, too.
I felt like the kills were all weak. That they
DJ
were not
slicing tongue off, and
that was kind of funny. but like several times, people just got stabbed, or they would even do a weird thing of like cutting away.
Now is this like a reflection of us as a society now that we want the gruesome kills? Because while Halloween did have kills, Michael just stabbed people.
Sure, like if that was the movies that they had been making, but like the previous movie. Did
Michael kind of, did just like go house to house and kill people.
They escalated it, and I thought and I don't even normally like those movies, but I thought they did a pretty good job.
Yeah.
And you know, that was the one that opened with him basically the fire department that went into the burning building where little did they know he was in, and he just like wrecks them in horrific ways. And yes, I guess I will say that is broadly I was looking for more of that.
Okay.
I also just thought that the writing was weird. Like, sometimes the characters' motivations and stuff seemed
I thought the romance
dodgy.
Was very 70s, like, Faye Dunaway, Robert Redford, 3 Days of the Condor.
Oh, you mean it didn't make sense?
A little bit. I mean, they definitely rushed the romance.
Just kind of happened, yeah.
And I thought that was kind of its weakest link in a lot of ways. But overall, I see why people were upset with it.
Yeah.
My brain could, because it was already, I was warned about sort of like the big change. I was like, okay, I can roll with this. This is interesting.
And I do think there were like, at times it was interesting. Sometimes I thought the writing, like if it had just been better, would have probably won me over to the basic idea. But there is also, I will say, there's a contingent of people you're not completely unusual.
No.
There's fans of it that have said, like, and oh, and it has a pretty satisfying ending.
It does have a great satisfying ending, and it has a showdown with Laurie. And that was kind of like
you
what
are going to get that one full on fan wish fulfillment, which is a full on knockdown drag out fight between a somewhat aging Michael, not at his peak.
Versus an aging
Laurie Strode, but who's like she has put a lot of points into combat.
Oh yeah,
since like all the points she had left after her teenage years have gone into combat.
That's true.
And some into
drinking
and
combat,
and some into grandmother.
and drinking
and drinking. Yes, it has a pretty satisfying ending. And who's the guy who's like the sheriff? He's just a fun character.
Oh, that's Will Patton.
Will Patton. Always fun to see Will Patton.
Oh, he's always good.
Yes. Yeah.
I would recommend watching it. Just go in knowing you're not going to get your traditional slasher.
And I would recommend not watching it, but but if you must, you may enjoy it if you know what you're getting into.
I'm going to go with Dave's recommendation.
Well, you didn't watch the last one.
I have not watched the Halloween since the very first one.
Well, then you need to see Halloween 3.
You've not even seen Season of the Witch?
I do not. I maybe at some point we'll see it.
All right.
There was a nod to that in this, wasn't there?
They have nodded to it in all of them with masks or with a color scheme here and there. And I always appreciate it.
I think David Gordon Green, who's the
imagine me standing up and applauding, like, what's his name? Orson Welles in Citizen Kane anytime those fucking masks are on.
Dave, now would you like to talk about Until Dawn?
Yeah, I'll give the kind of brief thing. This game is like 10 years old-ish, more maybe, I don't know.
It's sitting on my PS4 because you have lent it to me.
I've lent it to you. It's a horror game, kind of in the style of the Telltale games, but I would say more graphically beautiful. It uses very, very nice high-definition renderings and rich CG art. Of somewhat known actors, and it's a sort of a teen slasher thing, but where you will ultimately play all like eight or so different people, uncovering this mystery, and so Hayden Panettiere is kind of the lead character, the nice girl in there. Rami Malek plays a central character in it, and then there's Peter Stormare is part of a. A bridging sequence that bridges all the scenes together as a plot, and it does have a good story to it. Like I was like, this should be like a Blumhouse movie. It would be a good kind of updated slasher idea. As a plot, it begins a year before the main game stuff will take place, where there's some kids out in a cabin. It's like one of their family kind of like has a nice lodge out there. And there's a sort of shy, nerdy girl who has a crush on the jock sort of dude. And he passes a note to her that says, hey, I'd like to maybe spend some time alone with you. They sneak off to a room together. But it turns out to be this prank set up by, like, everybody else but her, or a lot of them. And she goes in and she starts taking off her top in front of him. And then she hears giggles and realizes there's people, like, in the closet and under the bed, like, filming her and stuff. She gets super embarrassed and goes running out into the snow. Her sister, who is there also, goes running with her. And they end up being pursued by somebody who we actually, like, see a point-of-view shot, who chases them through the woods where they tumble off a cliff to their deaths in the beginning. And then the game begins a year after that. Rami Malek is the brother of them and the surviving member, but he's also kind of a bro, and he's sort of like, hey, let's try and get our lives back together. Let's have a party again, and we'll honor my sister's, and also move past it, but also he says, and let's party like porn stars. They go back and like the beginning thing is like you playing one of the characters going up like the ski lift. It's an otherwise kind of like deserted type area. There's big scares in this, huge jump scares, fun mystery stuff. You gather clues, you choose things, conversation trees, things you will choose who lives or dies. And
is this a co-op or a single player?
It is a single player.
Okay.
And they, it is possible I have heard to win the game with everybody. I'm not quite sure how, but I guess it's possible. I believe when I completed it, I was actually playing it just spotting out with my brother. And we were just, I'd play like through an area, he'd play through an area. I think we may have only had two survivors the group. And there's some fun, the mystery is legit and also calls back a story from the 1950s in it, kind of begins to be revealed. There's questions of, well, is anything supernatural going on? There's several different suspects. And one of the funnest things in it for me is when you play, sometimes you'll play as a person who's like, oh, this is the kind of super bitchy girl, the queen bee mean girl, right? Real mean girl. But when you're playing as her, I found I wanted her to live. and I was like, oh, she's actually pretty, she was pretty clever in this scene. She got away from this threat. And I was like, now I want her to live. I want her to redeem herself. And then I've played a few other games from these guys, and they're pretty good at this kind of thing. Highly recommend it. No major flaws. It's a pretty brisk game. I think it plays out in like 10 or 12 hours. And you can like then go back at the end. It opens up all the chapters, so you can go back and just sort of see what alternate decisions would have been, how things would have changed. But yeah, Nick, I look forward to you trying it out, and then we can maybe compare notes on it for a subsequent podcast.
So y'all were going to talk about the Rings and Realms podcast, which I'm going to try out later. I have not had a chance to listen to it yet.
Yeah, this is the not an official podcast for Rings of Power, but an unofficial podcast.
Yes.
But by a guy who's been making about a zillion podcasts related to Tolkien stuff. He is known as the Tolkien Professor.
I mean, he's been doing it for almost like 20 years.
Yes.
It's insane.
And I've listened off and on for much of that time.
For 20 years, Dave has listened.
I was there, Nick, 3,000 years ago.
And he's knowledgeable, but not stuffy.
Right.
He's actually pretty down to earth in a lot of ways.
He's got a kind of high degree of enthusiasm and just about anything he does. Even when I remember when he would talk about the Peter Jackson movies, and there was plenty of stuff in there that he didn't like or thought was bewildering that they made one choice there or changed something from the book and changed the thematic. But for him, he always saw it as an opportunity to talk about the book and say, oh, they made this interesting choice, and discuss why they made it. Like, he's very much the mission statement of the podcast, and there's a woman who's also a professor who helps out.
She's more focused on like filming, like how they actually film certain scenes, like certain shots mean.
And you've heard more of this than I have, but she also talked about
all of it.
She's also written stuff about like translating things, from like
adaptations.
Adaptations, yes. And so they do the thing in the first episode where they talk about like, you know, let's try and like put a little bit of our baggage of expectation behind and try and embrace it for what it was, for what
he,
it is.
He does that for the most part.
Yeah.
Towards the end, he gets
a little bit like,
he's
whoa.
Like, whoa, what? He's trying to like cobble together like a reason why this is all happening, and he's just kind of like, he's fumbling a little bit.
Yeah.
The end of this really puzzled him.
Interesting. Well, I know that like, he does a neat thing in the first episode, which is he just like does a recap of like what happened in the first age and what the basics are of the second age where the show takes place in.
I thought the explanation of the first age of Tolkien was really, really
interesting.
It's
super good. It's just like in 10 minutes you'll get like kind of all the key stuff, and it kind of helped clarify some things for me that I just kind of didn't know, which was like that the second age is like kind of considered a troubled time for humans.
Yeah.
That they are in like a kind of a, not a fallen state, but it, you know, like get the impression that this is closer to their dark ages. That there's like, what's the big island nation that we see in the show? Numenor.
Numenor. Yeah.
That is flourishing, and will bring some technology to other areas and things like that. And you know, but yes, and that I was like, oh yeah, that fits because like everybody you see, everybody else looks like they're living in mud. But. His commentaries, like, I've only listened to, like, two episodes. But he seems like, you know, I know that Corey Olson, that's his real name, that his thoughts are pretty good. I don't agree with everything he says.
No.
But I feel like he always makes a goodwill, like a good faith case for things, and he's smart about it.
Yeah.
Like, he talks about the thematics of Light and Shadow in the early on in the series.
I thought that comparison stuff was great.
And he talked about how, like, even at, like, when, like, Galadriel jumped from the ship, from the light of, like, Valinor into the darkness of the sea, and you saw that she was, and they had mentioned that metaphor of, like,
she was the boat.
Of the little sailing ship in, like, in the creek and not sinking like a stone, but at points she does sink like a stone, and how it was a visual, worked as a visual metaphor for her own struggle. Yeah. To follow the path of the light, which is clearly going to be an ongoing theme throughout the show. And I was like, oh, I just hadn't picked up on all that visual metaphor for it.
In a lot of ways, he is like us with comics.
Yeah.
And like Marvel
that depth
universe,
of knowledge.
That depth of knowledge. And it's interesting to see a person come from that because they understand Tolkien in a way that I think few do.
Right.
Or the ones that do. I mean, there are a niche group that band together on Reddits and Discords.
Yeah. But he has gotten really good at this, and I have sometimes listened to his lectures, and I like listening to those, but I sometimes find them a little frustrating because you'll hear him, like, reading comments from his, like, virtual classrooms that he, and responding while he's doing it, and so it can lead him to be just a little unfocused and bouncing around in
this
ideas.
Is definitely...
And this is more like he's, like, got some prepared, smart thoughts. He's, like, some write-ups.
Yeah.
So I highly recommend, even if you don't plan to follow up on it, I would recommend listening to just the first episode and hearing his overview of like, the setting and stuff.
Yeah.
And then see if you like it. Nick, any other thoughts on...
No, I'm... I mean, like I said, I've listened to all of it.
I think I'm probably going to as well, even though I know it might contain sort of spoilerish stuff, because he will talk about things that are, like, known if you know the canon.
He does, but he doesn't, like, focus on it. He'll mention it, like, kind of, like, aside.
Right, or he'll be like, we know we're going to head, this is going to happen somehow, but we don't know how it's going to happen, and it'll be interesting to get there, and all
of
that.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm here for it. I'm in this game for 5 years.
Yeah.
I mean...
I was surprised you found it, though, Nick. I've listened to this guy since forever, but I don't think you'd listen to any of his podcasts before.
I don't know where I got...
What prompted you?
I have no idea. I think I was going to look at it...
What are you, like, a nerd?
I wanted to listen to one of his other stuff, and then I saw that he was doing something for the Rings of Power. He's actually doing two podcasts for the Rings of Power.
Not surprised at all.
The other one is... I forget what it's called, but it's their more chat-based one.
Okay.
I don't know if it's actually on, like, a video chat or something that they do...
But maybe more interactive.
It was more interactive and more kind of about some of the other stuff. I think that's where they got to gripe a little bit more.
Yeah.
And I'm curious to check that out just to hear it a little bit.
Sure.
Because at this point, I kind of like Kirill.
It is kind of funny. It's funny.
Because it's a little like, that character doesn't do that. They don't do that. That happens in this age and this, and it's like,
yeah,
I know, but this is an adaptation.
Yeah. Yeah, they're doing a little bit more blending of eras than I think some of the dedicated would like.
But he does bring some interesting points, and I think his grasp on sort of the themes and stuff that they do every episode is very on point.
What's it called? Rings and Realms?
Yeah, Rings and Realms.
Yeah, so people should give that a look.
I'm going to give it a shot. I'm still making my way through the Video Archives podcast, which
very
is, of course,
fun.
I need to watch.
Yeah, I imagine we might talk about that again at some point. I jumped ahead because I didn't want to listen to one episode, but then, Randy, you told me something funny about it, and that there was I didn't want to, like, find out about a movie that I kind of wanted to see. But then the more I thought about it, I'm like, I don't think I want to see this movie, and their commentary sounds more interesting, so I'm probably going to go back and listen to that now.
Speaking of revisiting, we're going to close out by revisiting Andor.
Yeah,
all right.
For those of you who listen to the religiously to our podcast, Russell.
Yes.
you might remember that I was a bit of a downer on the Andor.
Yeah.
I have reluctantly agreed that Andor is a good show.
What was it? We're on episode 7 now.
7, yes.
8 hits tomorrow.
And let's just quick say, these are in 3-episode arcs, so that's the start. 7 is the start of a new arc.
So 6 ended with the big heist.
The big heist, and Andor having to put another person in the grave by putting a gun to their face.
So the thing is, the heist was always going to get me. I love a heist.
Yep.
It's one of my favorite genres, and this was...
But they are. It is, like, not quite the pop heist.
No, but I also love a heist gone wrong.
It was a gritty heist.
This is a heist gone wrong.
Oof.
Yeah. And you could see it all coming. Like the tension of this heist was more than any other heist.
Well, it made it feel like kind of, you know, the show is kind of more real about kind of everything, and like it's that thing where you realize, oh, a real thing like this could go wrong at so many places.
Yeah, this is more.
They actually get quite far into
this
it.
This is more Heat than Ocean's 11.
Yep. Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
Yep.
They get quite far into it before things go wrong.
just on a random altogether random thing that their radio didn't.
I love that. By the way,
signal.
Oh, right. Before that happened, in the episodes prior to, you saw them like drilling like Imperial troops and stuff like that, mm-hmm. so that when they portrayed like a that they were like a guard, some fill-in guards or whatever.
Yep.
That they would be able to have the movements down and have a little bit of that stormtrooper snap to their
stuff. One of them was like an ex-stormtrooper, right? Too.
Yep. Anyway, so heist and all that goes down, and I was like, well, where are they going to go next? Is he going to go join the rebellion? He doesn't seem to be in that headspace yet. We wondered if he would go back to the planet where his adopted mother was, and he does.
Thanks.
And I was actually really happy to see that happen, because I was like, these characters are kind of too interesting to see them left, and I really liked her. And what happens is he shows up, he's got his pay from his mercenary work,
yep.
Which is not like enough to live like a king forever, but it's enough to get her out of this crap.
It was a lot.
but he's like, we can get out of here and go anywhere we want, and the interesting thing is she doesn't want to.
She's ready to stay and fight.
She's riled up at this point.
She's old. She's like, I'm going to die in the rebellion.
Does she know that he was part of...
No, she doesn't.
Actually triggered that inadvertently.
Yeah, the Aldani mission was what showed her that the Empire had basically done too much, and she was done with it.
Well, that's what Episode 7 was all about, was all the knock-on effects of the Aldani invasion. Like, the split between Mon Mothma and... whatever his name's, the art dealer
Lucian?
Character.
Lucian.
It's close to that, but it's not that.
Lucian?
Oh, man.
Lubies.
Not Lubies.
Anyway, the two of them...
Skarsgård.
The two of them, the tension between the two of them, and what's a good idea and what's not, and who's like, if she's just... basically, he's accusing her of like not being enough in the rebellion... Of wanting to think things safe, too safe, and it's
well, it's interesting to her. Interesting to see Mon Mothma's like getting strangled by kind of Imperial her driver and like all the people in the Senate, and she's being watched, so she's having to sort of like.
Plus, her husband seems to be ready to cozy up to the Empire.
Her husband's a big wastrel.
Yeah, yep. But this episode saw her meeting a person who lived from her planet, essentially.
I loved the scene where that guy said, "Is like, oh, I don't know if we should be talking about this." He's like, "You might find my politics are a little too extreme for you."
Like, she's like,
it'd be like he would be like the person saying like, "Oh, you know, I'm a liberal," and she'd be like, not knowing he's talking to like some arch anarchist leftist.
Yeah, yeah.
And
yeah.
That is exactly what's happening.
Yeah,
it plays out real subtly and cool because they're at a party and they can't talk openly. Yep. And so while they're doing all this, she's like, "Not like I just said something funny." And he's like, "What? What's going on?" And
they're really highlighting the dangers that come in being the early days of a rebellion.
Oh yeah,
like
how paranoid you'd be.
Yeah.
And also, episode 7 was the most Star Warsy of all of them because you've got.
Why did you say that?
Because you've got a Death or a Star Destroyer, you've got clone troopers, you've got stormtroopers, you've got shore troopers.
If I'm not mistaken, General, or what's his name, Yularen was one of those guys.
Yularen was the guy giving the FSB the kind of dressing down a little bit of like, he's shown up on Rebels, he's been in everything.
I'm not super into the ISB stuff. I don't really want to see I'm bored by the machinations inside the Empire's secret police. I'm not into that.
I like it.
I shouldn't be, but I do like it. I even liked that one lady's like chess game with.
Oh yeah, they have like essentially a debate room floor of like they're like the what do you call it?
Would you like to open up the room for to air your grievances?
Yeah. It's like there's vying for power among the secret police.
Yes.
Yeah.
And these are the leaders of it. Now here's why I like it, Randy. is I think that what they do an interesting job of showing you in this is how kind of, in a way, how miserable fascism is.
Yeah.
Not just for the people under it, but if you're even if you're in the thing,
yeah.
You're either A, caught up in the bureaucracy, struggling to just get ahead of the next person, ready to sell out the next person, yeah. Or turn them in. And, yeah. They're not feeding on each other yet. But they're starting to show those signs.
But see, I think that's my issue, because that's also the storyline they're telling with the yeah. guy who got people killed, who now is like a Imperial data miner and is miserable.
Well, it's also yeah. the story they're telling about the rebellion, because yeah. I mean, they decide to kill Cassian.
And see, I think this is where I'm at. Is that I don't mind it being a little gritty and real.
Yeah.
But when it's miserable. When it's like, this is how it would be in a rebellion. Sad and terrible. Yes, but that doesn't mean I want to watch it. And I think that when they double down too much on the how sad and how terrible all this is,
yep.
That's when the show loses me.
I think that's when the show wins me.
Interesting.
Cassian yeah. trying to basically screw off to a planet where he can just kind of lay low and have fun.
That was horrific and almost... That is almost comically to like...
Wait, which scene?
The thing at the end where he gets caught up... He gets caught up in somebody else's... scheme or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
And basically just because he randomly is the wrong time, wrong place...
The stormtrooper basically
he gets arrested and thrown in jail for 6 years. Like, I'm like, wait a minute.
Was that a flashback?
That was post...
I was not sure there.
Yeah, okay. I think that was my thing. It's like... At this point, Cassian has the worst luck of anyone I've ever seen. Like, that's...
Well, it's just telling you kind of the reach of the Empire, and yeah. because of what he did in Aldani, that's what caused them to raise all the...
Crackdown.
And then raise all the mandatory minimums on yeah. essentially yeah. Ending up the...
I get it, and I get what they're doing. I understand story-wise what they're doing, but it's such a weird choice to be like... there were any number of ways they could have done Andor's origin... And yeah. he was a Han Solo type, and he made his big payday, and then he was retired, and he got dragged back into prison, so he got forced back in the rebellion. I'm like, I guess, I feel like this is not the most interesting version of that story.
Well, I think, I like it because I think they show that it's inspirational in its way. It shows you don't have to be some born rebel to... end up becoming important to a rebellion.
Yeah.
And I think that's an important idea in real rebellions.
I guess.
What's the other thing? By the way, I also loved when, is it Skarsgård Luthen who's saying, it's like, yes, we want the Empire to clamp down.
Yeah.
We want there to be, unfortunately, losses.
It's easier to fight them.
Then it's going to agitate other people yeah, to our yeah, side. Yeah. And I'm just like, man, this is some real talk.
That is one of the things I liked about the ISB agent, the woman who's like, do you not see you're doing exactly what the Rebellion wants yeah. you to do?
Yeah. She's smart.
Yeah. And I do like that. I like that there's a subtlety of storytelling here that I'm not used to in Star Wars that I think is interesting and yeah. is well done. But I also think there's a grimness that I think they occasionally dial a little bit farther than they should.
I can kind of agree with that.
But like I say, I've been won over. I'm enjoying watching it. But I definitely, there are moments of each episode when I'm like, I don't know about that.
Let's return at the end of this arc and yeah. And see where we're at.
Is this 9 episodes total?
No, 12.
Oh, good lord. So we're gonna have 12 She-Hulks.
We're supposed to get 10. We got 9.
Well, they went with the better show.
No, they didn't.
Yeah, they did.
Well, we're going to get 24 episodes of Daredevil, so.
All right, but that's not for years now.
I know.
I have no Marvel show. Instead, I have this half Star Wars show to keep me occupied.
I think we have to, by the way, wrap, because I think our staffer may need to go home.
No, she goes home at close.
Oh, that's right. That's right. We changed up schedules some point.
We're also getting more Star Wars
this week. I was trying to look out for her.
Huh?
We're getting more Star Wars this week. Not only are we getting another episode of Andor, we're also getting Filoni's return
to... That's right. We're getting
Ahsoka
real and... Star Wars.
Count Dooku stuff, which I'm curious to see about the Dooku.
I'm going to skip all that.
Really?
I like the grim and gritty.
Well, I mean, this is definitely about what...
No, I might. I might. I've got some other shows since Rings of Power has wrapped and She-Hulk has wrapped. I've got a little bit of...
I also think Dave doesn't like... be like 10 minutes long.
Dave doesn't like dumb baby cartoons.
And that is true. I don't like the little children's cartoons, little animations that the little
like
babies
Star
watch.
Star Wars for grown-ups.
Yes.
Well, I mean, the Clone Wars did delve into what were... not as like grim and gritty as what Gilroy's
doing. There simply wasn't enough crying for me.
Yeah, not enough... Not enough bureaucracy.
But they did do some of what they're doing.
So, by the way, Nick, you know that we talked about that podcast. Was it a More Civilized Era?
Oh, God, yes.
That's the one where they do the, I'm going to say, kind of brutal political look at, like, all things Star Wars, including, with a focus on the Clone Wars cartoon. Mm-hmm. And I've heard that they've been covering Andor, and I'm curious to hear what their thoughts are on it, because I feel like it's everything they want. I've heard their coverage has been good, so I might have to look in on that podcast too.
Oh God, don't do
but
that.
Yes, it's it is like those guys do take all the fun out of it.
Yeah, they do.
Dave, you could you could watch this new Star Wars cartoon,
or
you could play 15 or 16 games of Marvel Snap.
Oh, interesting. You know what else I could do? I could watch the cartoon, find my attention span isn't enough for it, and play Snap while I listen to the cartoon.
Yes, there you go.
Didn't Prodigy already start this, or was it starting this
starts
weekend?
Thursday, so yeah. Star Trek Prodigy is back on, and I'm excited about that.
Yeah, looking forward to that, too.
Lots of good television starting back up.
Yeah, but no Marvel.
I'm okay with that.
Oh my God, Randy.
There's nothing Marvel.
It's like we're in a constant Marvel orgy now, and when you just, like it, when there's a break for people to get water, you're like,
who stopped the Marvel orgy? That is my question.
Let's just keep to that metaphor and see where we can take it.
But we're about to get like what? Black Panther
Black Panther and the Guardians holiday special.
They're so, all coming into the big orgy.
Like, isn't the Guardians special like end of November?
I think so.
Yeah, I mean, we're definitely not going to be missing.
Randy's going to have a tough couple of weeks.
I'm just saying, there's two Star Wars and no Marvel. It's not fair. Randy of 1987, who all that he gets is Mantis.
Yeah,
is like looking on in shame from the clouds at
me. We are getting Guillermo del Toro's Cabinet of Curiosities.
Oh yeah,
too. Curious. So I'm really looking forward to it. I saw that one. Did I mention this to you that one of them is actually a rendition of Pickman's model?
You did.
Okay.
You did.
Cool.
Yeah. I was.
I'm very excited.
Always like
for
to
that.
See a Lovecraft adaptation.
Interesting. All right. Well, that will wrap it up for us this week. And until next time,
Yo-jo.
Roguecast is a weekly podcast broadcast from Rogues Gallery Comics and Games in Round Rock, Texas. You can find us online on Facebook and at www.roguesgallerytx.com and email us comments or questions at roguesgallerytx@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.